That'd keep you busy during the watermelon season. How'd you grow them yourself, Mr. Roy?
Well, I didn't grow so many. And I got to where I worked in them and got to where I could get something to do as and paid something. My Lord, it must have had watermelon before it started at $1.50 a cost. You pick them for about that price, too.
Oh, really?
So, my. Planted a big piece of new ground for Jack Richardson for 75 cents a day. He gave it to me on a contract.
Yeah.
I made a good job of it, and he saw the way I started, I was going to make a good job. He saw I wasn't going to make nothing, so finally he told me, said, Mr. Ford, he bluffed me. Said, you go ahead and make a good job of it. Said, I see you don't lose nothing, Chubb. When I got two, I got 75 cents a day. That's what I really received out of it. Planting tomatoes and... That's what I really received out of it. Planting tomatoes and like it is now, and beans. It just got so dry I didn't make a one. The rain started. And I made beans and tomatoes, chipped them over the state, and got pretty good money. Tomatoes sold $3 a box in Lakeland. Just late.
Oh.
The man W.G. Reddick in Lakeland. I just happened to be in touch with him, knew him. Straight honest man that ever lived. Tomatoes wasn't extra fine either. On the express out there, bought $18 worth of beans that these boys. Gave them a check for it, brought you and Mott cashed it, took it and lost it. It was turned down or something or other. And he lost the check and I never could collect that. The man told me if I get the check, paid, but I never did. But I was working that shares with Richardson. So twice 18 was $36 worth of hard labor and everything I put out. Well, Mr. Bear, I've lost plenty. That's been what I lost. I've been on easy street. Long way.
I didn't know Mr. Patterson ever had a horse.
Yes, he tried to raise a horse, cattle and feed.
Where was he living then?
He lived, about the same place, I believe.
Up there where he is, that big house?
He's now. Biggest part of the time. I can't recall just where else he did live. I've been here in Nicanoka a short time.
It'd be nice to go up there and talk to Mr. Patterson sometime.
Yes, sir. Clever folks. You can find nice, clever folks, Mr. Patterson.
If you didn't have to go down to the doctor, we could run over there right now. I got a little time off.
Well, you know,
I'll catch you again someday and we'll run over there and talk to her.
I'd beat the beater. Anyhow, I'll take a chance of anything on God's loose. Okay. If you're ready, let's go.
Okay.
Hey, Mr. Moore.
If I don't live for this one day out, I won't be lost much for going.
That's right.
Now, that's right, isn't it?
Yeah.
I got that there. Trees up there on the mines and much. Name is not just right. How you spell yours?
M-I-L-E-S.
M-I-L-E-S. Miles. But you know, I can't hip in my old days, but conversation when it happens to hit just right, is to go to the great man. He says, he that's the greatest on earth shall be the least in heaven.
Yeah.
He that's the least on earth shall be the greatest in heaven, and he that's greatest on earth shall be the least.
Yeah.
The Army.
Yes, sir.
Well, see, every one of us trying to be great. He says you mustn't boast about your wealth. You mustn't boast about your wisdom. And all such as that. Now, I don't know, but I guess you call them commandments, don't you?
Yeah.
All right.
You know, that's hard to, you know, that's the sort of thing a fellow would never think of, you know. You see all these people that are well off and everything. You think, well, they're going to be the head man wherever they go.
There's something over 600 of them, every time you read the scripture, and I don't know if there's a whole lot more that don't sound so much like a strict commandment, but it is. There's nothing so small that Christ doesn't notice. You know, he says he knows every sparrow on earth.
Yeah.
And so sometimes we think these small things, we shouldn't abide by it.
Yeah.
We should just ignore it.
Yeah.
You don't belong to do it.
Uh-huh.
You're losing out when you're doing that.
That's right. I'm just coming up here. When I'm passing, I just want to hand. I've got some feed in here, Mr. Boy.
It doesn't make a great deal of difference to me. Where you go?
I just want to get rid of this feed. I got these five little bulls out here. People pass by here and want them. Yeah.
Just when you do that, some water. David said that it's time to do the best thing on God's globe.
Is that right?
Yes,
well, I never
sir.
Thought of that.
Yes, sir. Keep fires away and everything. Heal in. On contact. Keep the fever out. All of that.
Is that right?
Yes, sir. You know, I'm a bedding there, and if you didn't know it.
yeah.
My son, that Thomas, you had an experience?
I know him, yeah.
Well, he learned it from me.
Yeah.
He does quite a lot of veterinary work. My father was a veterinarian, self-made veterinarian, so I learned from him, and that's what I am. If I'm going to alter a calf, I do it different, maybe it's like this. I used to have these plants.
See, my brother Rob.
Yeah.
My brother Rob.
Yeah.
He
come over. Lift that bag. Side. Take kernels out of it.
Mm-hmm.
See here? Mm-hmm. It's on the side. It rubs him here against his thighs, you might call it.
Mm-hmm.
Quarter. And this way, split it in the back. Take them out. Up front either, where it doesn't rub.
Mm-hmm.
Take it out. You wouldn't think so, but the more the string you get, the better off you are.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Well, it's unnatural body that has to rot out.
Yeah.
You kind of scrape it a little with your knife sometimes and pull it, and get the way it runs out almost to nothing and clip it off. Mm-hmm. If the least bit left doesn't make so much difference, but if you leave too much of that, there's swell and fever. And I have a pan with some pool of water in it. And you know, one animal's blood is poisonous to another. Whether you knew it or not,
no.
But it is. It seems like it's like it's poisonous. And as long as you wrench your knife off in your hand, you're gonna put them on the animal. Wrench them in that water. On every operation, get another one. Be sure you wash your hands and your knife before you operate on the next one. And you can have a little medicine dropper, something like that. You can take it through here and just stick it in there and squirt it in there. I drop it for that water, have it pretty strong, and it hardly swells. Keeps flies off and everything. And you just get well so quick.
Well, you know, I'm glad to know that.
I operated on some of that for Mr. Gaddy. You know, he's a man that's kind of, I don't know, goofy about something like that. it didn't hardly swell. I let my boys, they didn't, I didn't let them. They went down at the tin one day and grabbed the yelling and halted it. And they were particular about what they'd done, and that yelling like to die before I caught up with it. The old man, he just swelled and he couldn't hardly walk. Me out on it, done closed all up and fevered the yelling. Made him catch it, and he done quit eating. And they didn't know what to do, but I got a hold of something. Pump Clorox water in there. Made it go on up, you know, far enough to stay that deep in there, that bag. And shock. It wasn't 3 hours before that yelling was up. One of them died of business in the evening. And he had eat hard in a day. Just think of how quick it is.
Yeah, just got relief right off.
Yes, sir. Took all the fever out. About as quick as anything you could use. Well, I tell you something else. The people are cranky about alcohol. Sure, good, the strong vinegar is the best thing, as good as any alcohol you ever rubbed on you. Better. Take out swelling or soreness. My wife's legs just swore out of sight, you know, there on the bed. My Jesus, good. Better. Take out swelling or soreness. My wife's legs just swore out of sight, you know, there on the bed. My Jesus, good. They didn't know what to do. Nobody. And then, want the rub? I said, no, I said, just bathe it with vinegar. Taking care of bathing, but wasn't long for her legs had gone back to normal. They didn't know, they looked like they couldn't control it, no way. Nurses was consulting the doctor about it. I don't know what he told them to do, but I told them that. And they could put a bandage, you know, to hold it there, keep from drying out too quick. Dampen the bandage.
Yeah.
So when they got to doing that, why, it was pretty stubborn, but it sure did bring it all out.
Was that at home or in the hospital?
Right there at home.
Right at home.
You know, they gave her up when they sent her home. Told them what to do. Anybody never did tell her that she was in trouble, but she knew.
Mr.
She didn't confess it, but she knew.
Yeah. Mr. Boyd, I'll tell you somebody who's good at remedies. That Ms. Patterson.
Ms. Patterson.
Yeah. Once she learns the remedy, she's singing like she never forgets it.
That's the way to do it.
And I've been over there a lot of times, and you know, done so many things, you know. I'd ask her about remedies and cattle or foot or something like that, and she'd just come right up with one every time. Let's go on.
All right. I'm down on a little lodge this morning.
Yeah.
And we're sure than usual. You have your seat, huh? Trying to get down here.
Haven't seen words with you. Glad to see you. How's the folks on here?
She's getting along fairly well, I guess.
Looks like you are, too.
I guess there's something happened to me Monday morning I never had the headache, but very little. I woke up with a pain up there. It was right up in there in my eye, and a pain, and it was bad.
It wasn't like mine yesterday morning.
Well, I don't know. It felt pretty bad, and then yesterday morning, it was that way.
Same thing this morning?
This morning, no. I haven't felt it this morning. I felt it last night.
It's pain over your eye?
Yes, right up there.
Over your temple?
Yeah, it doesn't stay there all the time. Today you couldn't stand it. But it was just a dull headache, you know, till every once in a while those pains would go through it. You have a headache?
Well, I don't think you have a headache. It doesn't seem like it. I'm bothered with sinus trouble about as bad a case as anybody ever had. And it makes my head feel shook, kind of like I had a bad cold. Sometimes much worse than others. But my trouble jumped on the last October. I just have a, like a drunk man or something, they just have a blacking out spell that comes just like that. And I go to the floor. It's just as quick as that. And I have to be awful careful, and it strikes me, it makes me feel just like, or if you're going to fag out. And it doesn't last but just a moment or two. And you do, you can be taken from feeling perfectly all right. And it wasn't going to last for just a few minutes. And it's all over. And you go on and feel yesterday morning. I had about as bad a severe spell as I've had. And I think I had got up on my feet before and lay back down on the bed a moment or two. And it took me just as I laid down on the bed. And oh man, looked like I was going to, I don't know, I was going to go through the bed or off of it or somewhere and didn't know where. It's like I was going crazy in the bed world or something or other. I was going to go out of this world, and it lasted that way any time, but it was off, maybe not as quick as you could pop your finger almost. And I got on up. Kind of staggered a little bit. Went on about my business, felt fine all day long.
Let me tell you what he said about you. What is that? Go ahead, Mr. White.
Excuse me. And so this morning, it wasn't so severe, but it just held on. I feel kind of sick at the stomach. I feel weak. And I feel like kind of giddy headed or something or other. Like I want to stagger and fall. And I said, well, it must be my time to start. Do something. So I set out to go to the doctor.
He's on his way to the doctor when I saw him. He said, you want me to tell him, Mr. Warren?
Go right ahead and tell him.
He said you had some poor and china hogs, two of red, and give him a meal.
Yeah.
I lost it by being in a bean business, so up to my eyes, and couldn't care for my hogs. And you know, when you had as many beans as I used to grow, when bean season comes on, you'd hardly have time to eat. So you're not having to buy anything else.
Well,
I lost the hog.
What was you doing with pulling time?
Oh, I don't know. I just, there was a fella out there from Wake Forest that had some, and they were pretty little things. I guess they were about that high, and I was out there one day, and I told him, I said, I want two of them pigs. He said, no, said, you don't want two of those pigs. He said, you just want one of them, and said, then you want one from someplace else, he told me. I said, well, maybe you know better about what I want than I know myself. He said, yes, said, I'll swap this fella, one of my pigs for a male pig, and says, then you have a pair that you can raise from.
That's right.
I asked him, I said, them male pigs was about 3-4 weeks old.
You're a pretty dog.
How much those pigs weigh? He said $50 a piece. And I told him, I said, how long before I can get them? He said, well, see, it should be about 6-7 weeks before we take them. And he said, I'll take them away from the hog and said, I'll take care of them for a week without no mother. And see if they're all right. And I give them a check for $100 now for two pigs. Them little sucking pigs. I don't know, I just wanted them. And I went, I carried them home, and I raised quite a few. And and most of the time I gave them away. I never sold none of them that I know of.
So Beverly gave me one.
I never did sell any of them. There's a fellow Bryce in Jacksonville. He bought two of them, but he never paid them at all. So that was the same thing as giving them to him. And, but I give several of these people around here one of them. But they were beautiful things. And I give some old nigger that mother, she weighed 540 pounds. Gave it to some old nigga. I don't know who he was now. I got the veterinary out here, and he said that she didn't have mineral, that she hadn't had the mineral that she ought to have. And she was getting, get down, she couldn't hardly get up. And he said that I'd have to give her a shot of this stuff in the shoulder anyway. He said, just stick it in there and put them up. And I didn't have time to do it. I didn't even stay here. I lived in Jacksonville. And anyway, they come down there, four great big niggas, to get the hog. But I made a runway up on the thing for them,
You mean they gonna pick her up?
And that's what they said, but I couldn't
understand
that. They cared all. I guess about 2-4 months after that, I asked somebody how to make me get along with the hog, and she said she died. So I threw it.
What happened to yours, Mr.?
My hog. Well, as I told you, I was busy getting beans, and I let my hog get to the others, and they just covered it. Too much territory for that hog.
He wasn't used to that country.
He wasn't used to it, and shouldn't not have been with him. It caused me to lose mine. I had hogs scattered around. They'd just go anywhere over the woods they wanted to go, around ponds and everywhere, and I ought to have the hog in somewhere near the house where I could see him every day and take care of him. Everybody did it with my wife.
Did you?
I didn't ask you that, huh? Sir?
You didn't lose many animals, though, out there in the swamp.
No, not to me.
Cows?
Well, I lost one, I think.
You ever have one sink in and couldn't get out?
Yeah. I tell you what, just come down to the brass statue that I lost somewhere about 40 yard head of cattle. In my cattle business, I lost 100 head of hogs in 30 days. But on the range, it's called intestinal septicemia. It wasn't cholera. And that's something hard to do anything with. And so about cows miring up, just in the woods and bog up. I had all the experience that I wanted that. And it was a hard matter. But they were very weak to make it over. Cows chew your animal on an average. If you ever get involved anywhere where you got to pick him up, if you haven't got him mighty awful, tame in general, get him out before he stays there too long. He is so. You know what so means?
No.
He just seems to get mad and give up. He just give completely up. You got to pick him up for main fences. And if you get them out of a bog, take him home and take all the care of him. If you don't mind, he's weak and you're wrong to hip and get up, try to raise him up. He'll soar and he don't try to hip himself one part along God's glory.
Yeah.
Take him up the main stem. I had a male over there belonging to Mr. Keeler, and he was 78 Arabic, 1,400 pounds. I'd done it by myself. I'd winnish that meal up. And he had pink eye. He was completely blind. Just looked like somebody shot him in the eye of a little bird shot when I found him. I doctored him and had him coming back. He was going to regain his sight. But he had a powder. I'd take a grass tube and stick it in it and put it to his eyes.
Mm-hmm.
He got that fluid in his eye. He soon got used to that, and I mean the proposition to get it in his eye. And but I even stuck to him so close till I had him on the mend.
Mm-hmm.
And I told him, had him installed and feed him cottonseed meal. He'd bring cottonseed meal. The mosquito had cottonseed meal gonna burn that bull up. He won't live on it. Oh, just go ahead and give it to him, Mr. Boyd, but I don't know where it's supposed to look up. And I gave it to him. And I was leaving there one morning before daylight, going to South Florida, way down in the good city. And the bull happened to be dead in the stall when I left.
You don't mean you're just living on cottonseed meal?
That's what he was doing. What he was doing, if I didn't give it up to him. Doing this way, he had plenty of cottonseed meal just feeding to him. So he would burn him up.
Mm-hmm.
He would do it. He lost.
That's a mouth of cottonseed meal would be much that much of it for
I never thought about just feeding an animal on cottonseed meal. It costs so much for it.
Well, it makes them drink entirely too much water, for one thing.
Yeah.
Just like you take an old mule, a horse that you would. The average person is feeding a horse or a mule or something like that forage. They give it its grains, don't mind if they kind of measure that to it. He goes to give him, hey, just give him all he'll eat and leave some.
That's what I do, yeah.
And you're doing the worst thing you could do. You're doing the worst thing you could do. I went to a man's place down there to buy some peanut hay. A little reddit down there. And he had went and had a bunch of old mules there, and he knocked off the gable in. He's having trouble feeding them. A plank or two for them to get in and just hit the fields for peanut hay. And then he must have knocked off several more planks, and then he got ready to go to the top and go on over.
Mm.
And they eat hay till they talk about stomachs.
Yeah.
And that mule had the biggest stomach and so sluggish.
Yeah.
Oh my. Don't feed them any more than they eat up first and clean, and be careful.
Yeah.
You know what it takes? What makes the stomach? It takes a lot of water to wet a bale of hay.
Yeah. Oh, I see.
And if you let him eat hay as long as he needs it, he's kind of starved out and hungry. And he goes and drinks water by then, he's like he he's like he grew up and doing
it. Well, now you think anybody would think of this, something
he's
like that.
He's not fit to work. He's sluggish. He's got more in him than he can tote himself. And it's nonsense.
Well, now when they talk about a hay belly, I don't know what they're talking about.
It's nonsense to give it to us.
From now on.
If you got a milk cow, you ought not feed it in such weight. You'll have all stomach correct, there ain't no beef.
Yeah.
Now, I'm just handing it to you just like I know it.
Yes.
And you can believe it, or you can... Yeah, let's go by. But take him to a plow or a wagon or anything you hit him to, or you got to put the whip gun to get anything out of it. And it doesn't look all he just
got an overwhelming stomach.
Yeah. He's just not energetic. He got too much stomach to carry around.
You see, a new horse, I guess, required about 1/20 of his weight in concentrate a day. And then a tenth of it would be too much of wheat, that much of grain, and hay. And they hold up to stay fat.
You don't have any mules over there now.
No.
You haven't had any good while.
I can put feed in the hog in the trough until he's breaking his own self and ruining his profit.
Well, now, I figured, Mr. Boyd, I'm not much fun. I figured if a hog, you just put feed out there where they can get it. Go ahead and let them eat.
Just let them eat all they want. Waste all they want.
Yeah, I guess so.
Now, let me convince you about it. My father had an old, looked like just an odd one in a same litter of pig. Kind of an old long, yes, I don't know what he took back to ask his grandfather or something or other. And he was long-bodied and lanky. And he finally thought he was so long and tall till he didn't hardly ask a fence any yard. He just jumped fences and started on the low places first. And finally he got so perfect that he jumped the highest place. And he got mad with him. He put him in a pen. You know, Mr. Bassett knows it. About these old rail fences in Georgia.
Yeah.
Old fence rails. Built a fence rail fence and fixed it so couldn't get out and curved it over on top where he couldn't climb over. He'd just climb it like a dog. Mm. He got mad with it. And he had to go right, build it right close to the barn, not too far from the barn, and on the way to the new lot. And he go by that pen, he said, he just made up in his mind. Said, I haven't got a great deal of corn. I'm going to try him on one ear of corn a day. If he dies, it's all right with me. He can't live on one ear of corn a day. Let's try the ear of corn. Said, he can die. Give him plenty of water. He'd go by there and he'd feed him. He would throw that all that one ear of corn. The first 30 days, it's like he'd starve to death, but he lived. After 30 days, he commenced to mend. Way over in the winter time, when he butchered that hog, why, he was the best hog he had. I think he weighed something like 300 pounds. Had a bigger hole on his nose where he hung him on the butcher. You know. He was so long.
Hmm.
Just as healthy as he could be. And he mended, and he made a tremendous nice hog.
Hmm. Did he ever increase his feed?
Never did.
Never did. Just give my money.
And when he butchered him, see here, his stomach had done drawn down so it was much larger than that. Smallest stomach of man we've seen all the other looks at. He lived on it and got fat on it, as fat as he could be. And now you wouldn't think it'd be reasonable. That's a funny way to punish him, but I didn't much blame him. If you turned him out, right? He'd be. He's more trouble than he was worth.
I don't know how you'd fix one of old rail fences.
And you had to let him stay there, you know. There wasn't nothing else to do with him. He wasn't fit to kill and put him in there and butcher him. So
you know how to put up a rail fence.
If they're going over a rail fence, I don't know how they'd fix a rail fence or anything on it that would hold them in.
Why, you can weed it down, tie it down, or something like that, the way they can't go out the top. He'd climb it like a dog.
Back in there, put set a rail down up there and put it this way and one that way.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think a lot of people do that.
Sticking riders, you call it.
Why? Call it what, Mr. Boyd?
Call it sticking riders. Do like this and put one in the fork.
Yeah. Well, that didn't keep
him as high as you want it.
Yeah. That'd keep him from knocking it off. But it wouldn't keep him from going over it.
Yeah, you best read the cover so he can't go out and fasten the top down on it.
And he got the place after so long a time. I don't mean he does, but he's a young man. He's young.
Well, I'll tell you a story that my daddy told me. Whatever you feed him, he will say you feed him on that. And says you give him a bucket of water a day the first week. And he says the next week, says you give him two buckets of water. The third week, give one and don't ever give him any more water.
Don't ever give him any more water.
No. After 3 weeks now, he didn't give him any more water. He gave him a bucket a day of fresh food, two buckets of nature food. And the third week, one bucket went, don't give him no more water.
That's exactly correct.
And he said he kept the steer in the pen. He said, yeah, I don't remember how long. Kept him in there for some time. But see, he was such a foolish kid that they decided they wouldn't get him made sometime. And said they would be good. And I imagine it took some time to fatten this kid. At least 3 months, I'd say. At least 3 months. Those always take me 3 months to fatten. You don't think cow need water when he's fat?
No, sir. If you can give him the right kind of food, you can fatten it out and say, go in the well and get him a drop of water. That fast.
And I've never heard nobody that ever agreed with that except him. I never have.
Well, he knew what you were going to say right there when you started.
Right then, but now, my daddy told that a lot of times, but actually, I didn't feel anything like that, but I would have thought that the water would have been better for it.
Now, you mix in sweet potatoes and rutabaga turnips and top. And turnip roots and tops, and such stuff as that. And don't give him a drop of water. He fattens it up in less than 2/3 of the time, I'll say. Give it a plenty. Did he will? If you pull any kind of feed and all kinds of fattening feeds to him, and give him all the water he'll drink. He just loosens his bowel rest and he won't fatten.
Yeah.
And just enough of that other green forage, stuff like that, mixed in with your green, your fattening food, why, it just sends him right on off. And in 3 weeks, he'll be a different looking cow. You take a sheep, put him in what we call, in Georgia, we call a cool foot patch of grass.
You don't eat full 12, do you? You don't eat full 12.
Oh, yeah. Go ahead, talk. I'll just run out of tape. Well, that's right. Some people sympathize with him, so they won't stick to it. I get sore for that old steer there, that tin sometimes. He just stand there and I give him half a bucket of water, about a little better than a gallon of water a day to start with. And you reduce it if you want to. It sucks. Try to get some more, but that green stuff was answering the purpose of what he wanted, to the dry stuff to be the heat. And if you got that and give him something like that, why, It would take the water completely away from you if that's fast.
Now that's over there on your place where you are now.
No, that was in Georgia. That was in Dallas, Georgia, where I was born and raised.
Well, when did you come down here, Mr. Boyd? I thought you...
I was 21 years on the 4th day of February to put the foot on the ground and make it over on the 7th day.
Yeah.
And now I'm 81 years and 3 months old.
You're not as old, Miss Anna.
How's that?
You're not as old, Miss Anna.
Yeah.
She's way ahead of you.
What's your age, you know?
95.
Yes,
yeah. And I was over there.
I have to differ with you in a way. I don't mean to speak a word either. I guess as old as any man you see around here that's 90. You know, I'll live in the woods.
Yeah.
If anything in the world will carry you back, I have enough to take you back. Take me for a ride.
No, I think you're in good
shape. Too many men stood around me and stand and say, I don't see how in the world you could do it. I know Mr. Patterson can't hold me sanction that. Trinity, if I work them down to the barrel on the guitar, keep right on going.
I declare he gave his work and all of his children.
That's why
they should have. They are all of them. They know how.
I thought it's the best gift I could give them is to run them how to work. And every one of them knows how to get down and get it. It can work. They can do most anything that comes to hand, and so can I. I'd venture to say that I never tackled nothing in this world in my life. There's some things I know better than to tackle. But I know nothing about no water, no. That's some machinery thing that kind of thing. But I never tackled no job. Never let it quit.
What's some of the hardest jobs you've done, Mr. Boyd?
Oh, I don't know if I can just hardly call it out.
Would you call packing melons hard?
I'd say the hardest job I ever done. To take them, a mule or a hare or something and get in the field where there's a bed thrown up a balk in the middle and try to run out a balk that wide. And walk on it, and walk behind that thing all day long, and dump it, so on and so forth, to break out a bulk in the middle of a little crop, something other like that, and it's hard. I get so tired in my feet and legs, you know, my feet is too small, I got 4 in the stand. I get tired.
Mm-hmm.
It danced me out worse than anything I ever done.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of work falling, walking it. I thought I fly, walking in soft dirt.
Yeah.
When I'm siding beams, why, these low-fall shoes like this here, why, my shoes would be full of dirt all day long.
Yeah.
I'd be bogging. If I couldn't bog my heel, I've done it a many times, I'd step behind a man and fly for me. Do like that with the heel of my shoe if I couldn't sink my heel of my shoe in the ground. He wasn't plowing the shoe.
Mm-hmm.
Subsoil in the ground where the roots could grow.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's tiresome work. You walk behind a plow and you plow that way, you'll be tired when night comes. Your mind won't need no rocking, you'll go to sleep.
Mm-hmm.
But, Boyd, what did you think about the way people raise corn now and don't fly it? People up in Georgia, where we come from up there, they plant the corn and they don't wet it. They don't wet it.
Not at all.
They just put something on to kill the weeds and they don't plow cotton or corn. But about once, and that's to put more fertilizer around it. They don't.
They make it on fertilizer. I hear them talking every morning before daylight at my house now about how they're making that. It's nitrogen and potash, and it's the liquid form of it, and all of that. They pour the fertilizer to it and make it. They make it more than we used to make.
And my grandfather. had that, it was absolutely justified his size. And used to be considered a good farmer. And he planted corn in 6 foot rows. And when he'd have me to drop the corn, a little kid,
and
I dropped one every other stick.
And you hit the nail on the head. You explained to me when you said 6 foot rows. I know what you mean. I know how come that's big, largely responsible for making it. It plow out to what you call a water pour. Put your corn down in there.
Yeah.
And you can take a riding cultivator with two mules to it and keep the dirt going to that corn. And you plow every other middle, one this week and one next week, run a cultivator through it and take two mules and cultivate 60 acres. And you won't have to work hard to cultivate 60 acres in corn. Plowing every other middle, just run through one time through every other middle of it. Next week, the other middle.
Yeah,
and keep it a-growing.
That's the way my granddaddy did it.
Mm-hmm. And next,
now, that's when you had a 6 foot row.
Yeah. He made it,
and don't crowd it on the drill too much either.
15 to 25 bushels.
I gather 40 bushels a day without a spoonful of fertilizer. Not a spoonful, a tablespoonful.
Well, one time in my life, I seen two women down the lower part of the worst county. I was sticking out fertilizer with a tablespoon. It was a man, Jack Sutton, Dorothy. And they were putting out fertilizer with a corn.
You can take the stalk of corn if you just could dig it up or put it up out of the ground and give it a thorough examination. It ought to be an education to you how to grow corn. Every joint is under the ground has roots to it, doesn't it? Puts out a roots all the way around.
Yeah.
All the way around the stalk, across the roots. Dirt it up to your leg vine in it. It puts out some there, they used to call them brace roots, you know. Comes out above the ground. Rain the season comes and the corn's tossing them. It'll put out, you know, and go down and go in the ground. The braces look like it works good to call them. And all right to call them brace roots because they brace the stalk of them. But they feed to the corn too at the time when they need it. Well, that way of cultivating and continuously carrying dirt to the corn keeps new roots coming out. So the hot sun don't get down in the soil enough to dry them back. Well, there's main roots, and then there's what you call hair that comes on, I call them hair, goes on that main root that goes out yonder and hunts moisture. And these here hair root hunts plant food.
Mm-hmm.
Comes all the way on that main root. But now if you break that main root, you're cutting your yield of corn. You cut them hair roots off and they'll come back, and if you trim them off a little on the top side, there's some under the bottom and all the way out. But if you get up close to your corn and cut it off, you just about as well say it's almost like a man's main artery in his arm. You're cutting across. People look so little better than that.
But yours,
up there a few weeks ago in Georgia,
we used to plow right close to the corn.
Boy, they plant that corn up there now. had 2 foot rolls. And they are cultivating, planting.
It's like sorghum.
Three rows of it at the time.
Putting it in thicker sorghum.
Well, they have improved
thicker sorghum.
Have improved seed corn too, Mr. Patterson. You got that Dixie 18, you know.
Yeah.
It's kind of like that little corn that you used to call Hastings Politics.
Yeah.
It doesn't make a very large ear, but make a half a dozen ears of corn to a stalk.
Yeah, I planted.
My father planted an acre and got 10 cents a stalk. Every stalk in the field and kept a book on it. 10 cents for every stalk in the book in the field. And didn't get no big prize for the corn. And I planted an acre for a trial. He said, mine be his. And I got 10 cents a stalk for every stalk that was in my tax. And I mean, I didn't have any trouble selling it either. There's a man run a store in Dallas, the name of Will Hughes. I planted mine late, make it come in late, and all his roast near corn was gone. And so I hid it. And I went, had a old Ford truck. And I went in there and first gathering, I don't remember how many dozen I had, pretty good batch of it. I drove up to McHugh's store. I said, I've got some corn, Mr. Hughes. You know, father traded there really for years. I said, I'm going to say some roast near corn. He said, wait just a minute. Stepped out there and looked. He said, yeah. He said, how much you got on, man? I says, I think I have 50 dozen. He said, give it all to me. I went to unload it. And he put two or three men out there with each turn of paper bags. And I got the corn off the truck, they had done sold it. They done bagged it up. Every person looked like they walked the sidewalk. On a dozen two of that corn. So I'm gonna take two or three dozen. And it was gone. Next morning, I went back, I had 100 dozen. He said, give me all you got. And it's just that way for the last air wind. Taking the whole load, here's what it was.
It makes a lot of corn. But I made...
Now, is that the same corn he's talking about?
Yeah, same corn that I planted 4 acres of and then. But my brother told him, says it don't last, says it. Saul says it easily up, so he has to be headed to the stock and all. I never got nothing out of it. Didn't want nothing for that concern. I just wanted to plant it. But it made a lot of corn. I planted it, I imagine, about 6 inches apart.
Was that down here?
No,
as up there.
Georgia. And I planted it in a little corner. I up the old tree and piled them up and planted them. And it hadn't been cultivated, that old pail, which had been, I imagine, 15, 20 years. And broke it up and planted corn, but it's saying it made corn. It was 6-7 years of corn, there was a stalk of it. But I wouldn't begin to say how much fertilizer I put on it. I imagine I put just as much as you have distributed was put down to start with. I just opened it up and put all it had put down. And I fertilized it again twice. After that, and I imagine I had 1,500 pounds of fertilizer down there. And I put that much on that cotton the next year I planted that. But I believe that every pole ever been picked and a crack been got all the cotton that was off of that 4 acres, they wouldn't have been 50 pounds of net cotton. There were some stalks in there as big as that post over there. And you could ride a horse to it, you couldn't see it. I never seen such thing, but it sure didn't make no cotton. There's no balls come on it, and none of them ever got big in the end of your thumb, and they just cranked.
But it everlasting made the seed, didn't it?
Made what?
Made cotton seed?
No, I never picked it.
Never did pick it.
Never picked it on nothing. And if I'd have picked it, I wouldn't have 6 pounds.
I didn't
have gotten seed and all.
Well, I didn't quite get through. I'd like to explain that to you now as long as I'm on as far as I have.
Yeah.
That is what you call Hastings prolific corn. And it was prolific. It just, that was the nature of it, to make from 3 to 6 ears to the stalk, but there wasn't no size, and it had a little old cob in it, was much larger than this stick.
Yeah.
Now that's very much against roasting your corn. You could break it in the morning, as you don't mind, wouldn't do to shuck it, but it'd be swiveled on the cob before noon. Cob's too small, it doesn't hold enough moisture. And I just happened to strike that time. There wasn't no corn, no near corn. I sold it. But now, if you're going to buy a corn that makes good roasting ears or makes good corn, I heard people that didn't know any better. Between nothing but cob, too much cob. They want corn and wet big cob to let it. The less cob you have, the better I like it. But it takes a lot of corn to cover a big cob, brother. And if you want to make corn, you got to have a big cob. You know, way back then,
is that right?
They'd go plumb crazy about the little cob corn. They used to have old corn called little cob corn. I heard old gray-headed men talk about, I want the little cob corn. Got any seed corn? Got any of that little cob corn? I wouldn't have it.
On a melon with a thin rind. That's just being save money.
That's not so true. About a thin rind.
Did you have to have a pretty hard corn up there to stand up against the weevil?
Yeah.
I don't think we ever had much trouble with weevils up a little farther there.
You have a dry spell, you got that haste of prolific corn. A few days of dry spell, it just slow it down where it wouldn't make the corn it ought to make. It wouldn't fill out. None of that kind. A little old cob would dry out with a week's dry weather like it is now. The stalk and cob and all, wouldn't have enough moisture in it to produce corn.
Well, what was the chief corn you liked?
Well, my father had what you call Indian flint corn. He kept the seed as long as he lived, and I brought several bushels of it down here and sold it. Sold Mr. Wood a bushel of it. I don't know who and all. And I was hoping they'd get it started and would keep it.
Mm-hmm.
Made more corn, less fertilizer than any corn I ever planted in my life.
Mm-hmm.
That's the kind of the other 40 bushels of acres on natural dirt. A spoonful of fertilizer, maybe for years.
Indian flint,
hardest, best, most weevil-proof corn you can plant.
Big ear,
great big ear. If you give a mule 10 ears of corn 3 times a day, I don't tell you he could plow and wouldn't starve to death either. That's 30 ears of corn. 25 ears would shell a pig, struck with a stick and weighted wheat, supposed to come up to the weight. That's the way I judge anything of that kind. I learned to do that way back on. My father taught it to me. He'd take a stalk of corn, stick up a stick by it, and he'd cultivate one row one way and another row another way, and he'd dig down there and find the roots of the corn and break one or two of them and let the sticks stay there till gathering time come and see the difference. That's the way you educate yourself.
Mm-hmm.
It does a whole lot better than getting your farm magazine and reading it. You know, Professor Massey, the oldest farmer that ever made $1 million in the state of Georgia, he'd read Professor Massey's agricultural papers, but he didn't read nobody else's. He learned to farm a whole lot by reading Professor Massey that made $1 million farming.
Mm-hmm.
Where's the next man? Just nothing but farming.
Mm-hmm.
Well, a man like that's worth listening to. He could write about corn and anything else you have. Like crops, you know, peanuts, a whole lot of different things. And you'll see these little knots that come on roots of peanuts.
Mm-hmm.
What does it represent? Ammonia. That's what you call legumes. Little knots all up and down the roots on peanuts and other crops too. That's ammonia. Ammonia is what makes that. It takes in ammonia. Out of the earth and out of the air. You know, people fuss about planting in the moon and by the moon and all sorts of that. Now, I guess they have a crop in the moon pretty soon. And so, they don't know what they're talking about. You take a pea, you take a few peas out there, lady fingers or whatever, they might be black eyes. By the time that those peas start to blooming and bearing, it should be dark night.
Mm-hmm.
Because insects is a whole lot worse in moonlight nights than they are in dark nights. And there's a whole lot of ammonia in the air in dark nights than there is in moonlight nights. I guess you knew that.
Mm-hmm.
And crops take in ammonia out of the ground.
Yeah.
Well, I pulled a story down here with Wilshire Walker from Waterman. Never heard no man ever say anything about it, never knew to notice it.
What was that?
He had a patch of corn on the south side of a watermelon patch. And the corn was in full tossing. And become a wind, heavy wind, blew all that pollen off of that corn right over his watermelon field. And the watermelon was blooming and setting watermelons, and a lot of them is ripped good size, but the watermelon takes in moisture, anything as quick as anything you ever saw, because it grows rapid. And it put that pollen all over that watermelon field from that corn field. You cut them watermelons after we had a rain there, and they roots took from that pollen out of the ground, off of the ground, whatever you want to call it, and you could smell the corn pollen in it.
Mm.
Taste it all good.
Mm.
I told them about it. Them old growers down there. And they went to White Hart. Had to quit picking. Wait about 4 or 5 days for the melons to get ripe.
Mm.
Made them White Hart. You know, be a white streak in the center of them.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I don't know whether I convinced them or not, but I was thoroughly convinced myself that that's the problem.
I know him, Wilshire Walker.
Who?
Wilshire Walker.
Sure. He kept on. I started doing it before he started planting watermelons. He kept on, but I reckon he got rich. $65,000 and a half. So,